Ticket, please. Ticket. Let me have your tickets, please.
Here, young man. Here's my ticket.
All right, madam. Let's see. You're going to New York. Let me just punch your ticket for you there. All righty. Tickets, please. Let's have your tickets, please. Ticket? You, sir. Can I have your ticket, please?
I'm terribly sorry, but I don't have a ticket. I was in sort of a rush to get on the train.
I see. Well, I'll be happy to sell you a ticket, sir. Whereabouts are you heading?
I'm just going anywhere, wherever this train's going. I was in sort of a hurry to get out
of town. You mean the train was pulling out as you got to the depot? Is that what you
mean? No, that's not it. You see, I'm the president of the Walker Scott Fan Club in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And up to now, it's been a secret, but some of my neighbors found out and they ran me out of town. Would you please sell me?
Who's fan club did you say?
Walker Scott, the radio.
Walker, get off this train.
Well, I just want to
get off this train. Get out.
We are the joy boys of radio. We chase electrons to and fro. We are the joy boys of radio. We chase electrons to and fro.
Hi, everybody. This is Ed Walker, and I never thought we'd be doing this, but here comes Volume 3 of The Joy Boys, Remembering the Joy Boys, the Lost Masterpusses. Masterpieces. No, actually, I mean Masterpusses, because Masterpuss Theater is on the CD later on. You'll hear it. Well, before we get started, I want you to meet the man who made this all possible. He used to come down and watch our show when he was a kid, about 15 years old, come down every week with his dad. He has started our Joy Boys website, which is thejoyboys.com. I want you to meet Bob Bybee. Robert, how are you doing?
Ed, it's a pleasure to be here, and I never thought this would happen either. It was always my dream to do one Joy Boys greatest hits CD, and WAMU is kind enough to give us the opportunity to do several of them. Your fans are loving it. I get letters just about every week from people who encounter the Joy Boys on the web, haven't heard of them or thought of them in years. Some of them say, I'm not sure you did me a favor.
They all management. They never heard of us, and they never thought of us for years either.
Well, you said you could get away with murder because of the fact they didn't listen. You were on late at night.
That's right. That's absolutely right. But you have a number of CDs available on the website. About how many you got? Over 100?
We got about 105 CDs at last count, thanks to contributions from listeners and fans. A lot of it came off WRC-FM, so it's excellent quality stuff, including some of these master tapes that we're going to run right now.
Well, I want to thank publicly all the people who saved that stuff. We never knew they existed, I'll be honest with you. And a lot of the stuff I don't even remember anymore, but it's kind of thrilling to hear it all over again, and that's what we're going to do right now. Bob, thank you so much for all your work, all you do, keeping the Joy Boys website. It's thejoyboys.com. Anyway, getting back to the CD at hand, the first couple of pieces are advice programs that we did. One was The Answer Man, which was based on a character on WOR in New York, and he would answer silly questions. And we'll follow that with a lady named Dear Lucille, who would answer advice to the lovelorn and so forth and so on. So without any further ado, here's The Answer Man.
Stand by, and we got to do a show here.
Cue The Answer Man.
Yes, the Trail of the Lonesome Pine is part of a new route developed by the 3A's to St. Louis.
No, Indian Madras is not something an Indian sleeps on.
Yes. Wild and Woolly is the name of a manufacturing company that used to manufacture long winter underwear.
No, the song Hard Hearted Hannah was not written about a petrified woman.
Mm-hmm.
It's time once more for radio's time-honored program, The Answer Man. Now in its 84th year, each week at this time, The Answer Man answers the questions you, the radio listeners, have sent to him. Now here is The Answer Man.
Thank you very much, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Hello there, Willard Scott. Good to be back with you again and answering your questions out there.
Excuse me, I had a mint in my mouth, Mr. Angerman.
Oh, I see. Now, would you get to our first question, please?
Very good, sir. Nelson Popover from Potomac writes, Who were the first people to discover the Chesapeake Bay and use it commercially?
I think you'd find that's an advertising agency and some brewery over in Baltimore. They got a cute jingle, and boy, they've just about milked the bay dry there.
A bachelor button from Chevy Chase.
What?
It's Arthur Bachelor Button from Chevy Chase.
I see. I didn't understand.
Asks the question, how much is that St. Bernard in the window?
Well, that all depends on his pedigree and everything else. Probably a couple of $100, but I can get it for you wholesale.
A fireman from Alexandria writes, who removed the middle section from the emergency fire pole in the firehouse last week? I might add this comes from the hospital in Alexandria.
I don't know who did that, but whoever it was was pretty sneaky, I must say.
Finally, this question from a listener in Bethesda. Dear Mr. Answer Man, if you don't send me my alimony check before next week, I'm going to have to get my lawyer
in. You stop reading that?
Oh, I'm on.
My wife. I'm getting out of here.
And here she comes now. I think you better.
On my way. Come on, everybody.
You've been listening to Radio's time-honored program, The Answer Man. If you have any questions for which you'd like the answers, simply address a card or letter to The Answer Man, WRC Radio, Red Square, Heartburn 2, Virginia, along with $635 to cover the cost of handling and mailing. Be with us again next week when once more we'll present The Answer Man. It's time now for Dear Lucille. Lucille O'Neill, lecturer, doctor of psychology, and Potomac Playgirl in the award-winning series Dear Lucille. For you, the listeners, send Lucille your problems. Now, please keep in mind that Lucille does not answer questions of political, medical, religious, analytical, technological, hypothetical, numerical, or extremely intimately personal nature.
Narrows it down, doesn't it?
Dear Lucille is brought to you in the 24th year now by Madame Mamiuch's Calming Tea, the tea from the Orient made by Orientals for Oriental problems. Madame Mamiuch's tea is made from a treasured old recipe of 75 rare blends of Far Eastern tea leaves, plus a hint of soy sauce to calm you down when your temper flares up. Look for the big red box with a sleeping dragon on the front, and you've got Madame Mamiuch right where you want her. That's Madame Mamiuch's Calming Tea, now available in instant. And now, here's Dear Lucille.
Thank you very much, Willard
Scott. Over here, dear. This the microphone over here. There you go.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Willard Scott, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, in the radio audience, which is vastly becoming larger, I'm sure.
Well, so are you, Lucille.
That's not kind at all.
Been to one of our restaurants.
It's a lovely, wonderful day.
I'd like to say you look simply beautiful.
I'd love to have you say that.
I'd like to be able to, but I signed an oath the other day that I wouldn't lie on the air.
We don't allow any oaths on the radio. What's our first... Pray tell me, what is our first letter in that big mailbag?
Let me dip into the old bag over here. Ooh, pardon me, Lucille. First of all, Lucille, a lady from Wheaton writes, Dear Lucille, my aunt is a lovely person, and both Clifford and I, that's my husband, and the kids love to visit her. She is an older woman, and our visits seem to mean so much to her. She has this lovely little cottage in the suburbs, and the kids have a wonderful time. One problem, Lucille, her dog Nero is a 145-pound Doberman, and he's very possessive about Aunt Hilda. As soon as the car drives up, he leaps off the porch and attacks the car. Twice last month, he bit holes in Clifford's new Michelin.
Good heavens. Terrible.
Don't see Clifford. Just last week, when I was giving Hilda a friendly peck on the cheek, Nero, the Doberman, tore my pantsuit off and pinned me to the floor for 40 minutes. Hilda just laughs and says he's such an affectionate little thing. 2 days ago, I stopped by to take Hilda some homemade soup, and Timmy, he's our youngest, disappeared for a moment. I looked out back into the woods, and Nero had Timmy in his mouth and was carrying him off into the woods. You must help me. Give us some advice as to what I can either say or do that will let Hilda know something has to be done about Nero, or we just can't keep visiting her. Signed, Down Boy.
Dear Down Boy, I would suggest, first of all, you buy Nero some dark glasses, have a little suit made for him, and pass him off as one of our salesmen. He's got about as much manners, and I think he'd do very well. He might come home with a couple of new accounts.
Oh, yes. Okay, Lucille, nice one. Good O, as we say, Lucille.
Well, teach him to play the violin, he could fiddle.
While Rome burns.
That's right.
Oh, dear Lucille, it's brought to you by the 25th, for the 25th year now, consecutively. You may have blown the whole quarter of a century here, Lucille. Brought to you by Madame Mamiuch's Calming Tea. The Calming Tea made in the Orient by Orientals for Oriental problems. Remember, look for Madame Mamiuch with the big red box and the sleeping... with the sleeping dragon on the front. And you've got Madame Mamiuch where you want.
I'm dragging a little myself.
So long, dragon lady.
Give me a cup of that jam.
Transcribe.
Along with all the popular shows on commercial television in the 60s, public television was just now beginning to get its own wings, and they had some shows, one of which was called Masterpiece Theater. Very good show, narrated by a gentleman named Alistair Cook. So Willard and I decided we had to do something with this, so we called it Master Puss Theater. Willard's name was Alistair Crook. And one of the more popular things that they did on Masterpiece Theater was the Six Wives of Henry VIII. So we did a series. We ran it for a week, I guess, in the afternoon back in the 70s. You're going to hear them spread out through the rest of the CD. The Six Wives of Henry VIII.
This station, in cooperation with Public Service Broadcasting, presents the award-winning series, Master Puss Theatre, made possible by a grant from the Siamese cat lovers of the world. I am Alistair Crook. I am exciting, I am gorgeous, and I am perfect as a host for this highly educated program. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the first part in our series of six parts, The Six Wives of Henry VIII. As we all know, Henry VIII was a big man. He was big in his lust for life. He was big in his physical stature. He was big in his appetite. And, as would indicate by his six wives, he had other habits. Henry VIII, not really a bad sort. Henry VIII, more of a spirited, spoiled child who never really grew up. As our story opens today, the first story including the life of his first wife, Catherine of Aragon. And as we all know, with his divorce, he not only severed his marital relationship, but also broke relations with Rome. And now, part one of the six wives of Henry VIII, Catherine of Aragon. The scene is the court.
Yes, who is it?
My lord! My lord, it's your wife, the Queen Catherine of Aragon. She wishes to speak to you, sir.
Very good. Tell her to enter.
Very good, sir. Her Highness, the Royal Queen of England, Catherine of Aragon.
I know. Oh. I know that. I'm married to her, you idiot. Come in, Catherine.
It's just the way we did it at rehearsals.
Yes, I know, I know. Catherine, would you close the door, please?
You're out of the state, my dear lordship.
Matter of great urgency distresses me much.
Get on with it. I got a garden party going down in the Rose Room.
We've always got a garden party or some social event.
You're a fat slob. Have you ever looked at yourself? Look, take a good look at yourself.
This is off the point of the issue.
Well, go ahead.
We've been married for years, and I am devoted to you. You know that. You know that I love you. I've looked at no other woman since you and I have been together. But you have not given me a son.
I gave you Mary Tudor. What do you want?
I want a son.
Well, why don't you call Hertz? I can't do anything about it. It's not my problem.
I've thought it over, Catherine, and I know it will not sit easy with Rome. The only alternative I have is for us to sever our relationship.
You mean you want a divorce? Big deal.
Yes, I want a divorce.
You think it's a big deal? Had the guy come in. His Excellency the King wants to see. I heard all that.
It's all protocol.
I knew you were going to ask me for a divorce, and I've been planning for it.
You
get your divorce. Here, the papers are already signed.
Just a moment.
Wait till Rome hears about this, Big Daddy. You haven't seen the end of it all. Just
you're too anxious to have me sign. Is there someone else?
Yes, there's someone else.
There is.
There's a musician and the court players.
Irresponsible musician. Bah! What can he give you?
Been seeing each other under the balcony outside of the castle.
Is this oaf? I'd like to meet him.
I'll be glad to show him to you. Come on in here. Come on inside, sweetheart.
Well, a wonderful king. Good heavens, not him.
It's Lawrence, Sir Lawrence of Belk. And Sir Lawrence and I are going to go to the New World in California. And Larry's going to open up a dance hall.
That's right, Your Highness. I really love this woman. She does the polka exceedingly well. We work so well together, I've changed her name to Norma Zimmer. She'll be the lovely champagne lady, and we've named the ballroom after her. You mean the Catherine? No, the Aragon Ballroom. Let's go, Catherine. A one and a two.
So long, sire.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, part one of Masterpiece Theatre. Henry VIII and his first wife, Catherine of Aragon, having formed the Aragon Ballroom, she left the king. Tomorrow, you certainly will be interested in hearing about Anne Boleyn. The king lost his heart to her, and she lost her head to him. Until then, Alistair Crook. Good day.
Just Plain Stella Bear. There were a lot of family-oriented soap operas in those days, and this is one of the most bizarre. This one, I think, we have a little conversation with the organist. We called her Rita Rosa. Actually, the organist's name was Rosario, and she was one of the premier radio soap opera organists. And she's still living up in Connecticut, I think, in her 90s now. Still plays the organ every once in a while. This is not she playing, you know, on this record. This was a recording that we used for our theme. Let's go to Just Plain Stella Bear.
And now, Just Plain Stella Bear.
You're going to talk, and I'm going to play the organ all day.
Rosa, I've lost my script after 40 years.
You lost your marbles, you ask me.
She's losing everything anymore.
You better sing it.
Don't do those Sloan's Pill commercials anymore. Good advice. I don't even do that anymore.
King Kong Birdseed.
Used to do 48 states, 48 stars. Thrilled to the tootle of the flute and the crash of the big bass drum. City Service 5B Premium Gasoline. I don't even do that no more.
No.
Coleman freeloading tapo. This is Stella Bear, the kind story of a lady who finds truth and happiness in a world too busy to care.
What about King Kong Birdseed?
They canceled last month.
What?
They canceled the show after 12 years.
That?
Yes, everybody. We got a new sponsor.
Oh.
This is a participating sponsor. They don't buy the whole show. Foxes Frozen Locks. The only frozen locks available with or without bagels. Simply thaw and please paw. With the locks, with the built-in sin. Remember, it's a sin to tell a lock. Now, for the exciting adventures of Just Plain Stella Bear.
Those locks are very big up at Yale, by the way. Did you know that?
You mean a lock. Rosa, how do you feel after last night? Oh. As our story opens, the organ is...
Whoops, sorry.
...playing in the background. We find it's late afternoon.
Herbert goes again.
Herbert is just out of school. As he is standing next to his principal, Herbert is saying, school days.
Herbert!
Yes, my teacher, yes.
Sir, you think?
I've often wondered, sir.
You dumb ninny.
Oh.
Actually, Herbert, I've been having a need to have a talk with you for a long time, Herbert.
Yes, sir.
Sit down here, boy.
Yeah.
Herbert, that's what I wanted to talk with you about.
What, the fact that I sit down too much?
No, look at yourself in the mirror here.
Oh, terrible. Oh, it's frightening.
In short, son, you are a 48-year-old...
Well, I'm not in short, son. I was wearing my knickers there this afternoon.
You're a 48-year-old slob, Herbert. Look
I
at
must
your...
have aged.
Look at yourself. Fat and pudgy. It's disgraceful.
That is all solid... flab there, I want you to know.
Herbert, why don't you find a way to get rid of that baby fat? It's about time you're 40, you know.
You want me to diet?
Do something, but you make yourself so unattractive.
Okay.
Notice the little girls how they walk by you.
Oh, yeah.
There goes
right.
One now, Herbert.
Well, I'll go do what I can, see what I can do about it, all right?
Go
baby
ahead.
Fat. I got to chew this little baby.
And so Herbert fancies himself a little bit on the plump side, walks home as he opens up the door and walks in the house.
Doo-dee-doo-dee-doo-doo.
Herbert! Come here for a minute, sweetheart.
Okay, Mom.
Ah! You scared
me. Sit down here.
Oh. Herbert, that's what I want to talk to you about. You're a huge horse, Herbert. It's disgusting. All that fat, it just don't seem possible. You eat them cookies and all that chocolate and drink them pops. I just wish you'd try to find some way to lose some weight. Why don't you go down to Dick Fanny or do something? I don't
know. Well, all right, if you think so. I don't think anybody loves
it. And so, young Herbert, as the organ music comes in the background to help us with the bridge here. Thank you, Rosa.
Okay.
Wake up.
I'm sorry. Sleeping about last night.
As Rosa reads, as Herbert works out at the gym down at Dick Fanny's, 1 week goes by.
1, 2, 3, 4. I'll run and fight a little bit.
2 weeks go by.
Oh,
3 weeks
two,
go
three,
by.
4. Oh, 2, 3, 4. Oh,
4 weeks go by. Herbert returns home after having spent a month at Tick Fanny's working off 185 pounds. He walks in the house, a mere shadow is
over. Please, hold there. Boy, am I
as Rosa, knock it off on the organ.
Reach.
We're back in the
I am really rejuvenated. Hey, let me look at these drapings. That makes a good punching bag there, Mom.
Herbert's dad is reading the Wall-Eyed Journal.
Herbert.
Herbert comes in, Dad.
What are you coming here making so much racket for?
Oh, I just come back from Tick Fanny's. I've been working out down here. I'm all ready for the all-star Olympic team down there.
Herbert, I want to talk to you.
Yeah, what you want, Pop?
You look like the most emaciated thing I've ever seen. Look at you. You have to drink. You have to stand sideways when you drink tomato juice or nobody will see you. You're the skinniest runt in town. Now, why don't you put on a little meat on those bones, for heaven's sake?
Well, I may be thin and all that, but I sure am a fathead for listening to you all. First you tell me to lose weight, then you tell me to put on weight. I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
Well, Herbert's learned the age-old bit of life. You can please some of the fools when you want to feed. You can fool some of the fleas. You can feel some of the...
I didn't get that interpretation at all.
Abraham Lincoln said, I know I had it here somewhere. I never forget.
My hand is getting numb. Will you sign this thing off?
That's good.
You know, nothing survives on commercial radio if you don't have commercials on it. And Willard and I took the philosophy that some of our commercials were actually bits, which got us into trouble occasionally. Because a commercial, if a guy pays for 60 seconds, he's supposed to get a minute ad. Well, many of our commercials ran 2, 3, 4 minutes sometimes. Got us in trouble with management. Of course, we're always getting in trouble with management. That was a given. But our sponsors loved us. In fact, if we didn't do a number on them, guy would call up, "What's the matter? You mad at me?" I said, "What do you mean, sir?" "You didn't do a number on me last night." I mean, that's why they bought our show.
Well, that had some class to it.
Beautiful record. You're one of the prettier records we played tonight. I like that sort of record. Would you do me a favor now?
What?
Would you get off my lap?
Oh,
I mean, I enjoyed
I got you
having you here during the last 3 minutes. But...
Listen, I'm having trouble getting last year's things.
What's the matter?
And, well, I heard somebody on the air the other day say something about trying on the new shapes at Kirby's.
That's right.
I thought I'd go. Right. Is that a clothing store?
Well, sort of, kind of.
And, well, yes. I'm looking for something in a midi, not a maxi or a
well,
midi.
Well, we can put you into a midi.
Something like that.
We can get you into a midi-length automobile for mini payments.
An automobile.
For maximum performance.
Listen, Junior, I need some clothes. Who needs the other?
I kind of think you're interesting the way you are right here.
Good heavens.
Yeah. Oh, thank heaven. Now, you slip on over there, definitely. First slip into something comfortable, like maybe a towel, and then go on over to Kirby Dodge, 10th Street, North Washington Boulevard in Arlington, Virginia, where they've been now for 41 years, almost 42 years.
Hmm.
And they sell, as you might suspect, by the name Kirby Dodge.
Now, they sell the Kirby.
They sell the Kirby. It's a vacuum cleaner. I guarantee it's cleaner than the average fare, and it's a wonderful car. You just plug it in the wall as far as the extension cord will take you. Now, you knucklehead, they sell a Dodge.
Oh, the Dodge. Yes.
You go to Kirby Dodge to buy a Dodge. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't get a Pontiac there unless you got a used Pontiac.
Okay. I want it air-conditioned.
They've got that air-conditioned Dodge.
Stereo radio in it.
That's very good. You want a cartridge tape deck on it, too?
Oh, why not? Let's go for everything.
Would you like that?
Yes.
We have it all.
And a motor.
Yeah. No, well, now it's a little tough. You're asking for the sky here. But get on over to Kirby Dodge. Check out the Polara, the Coronet, the Charger, the Challenger. That's the new one. And the economical compact Dodge Dart. Great automobile. I guarantee you're going to like it. Marvelous.
If you say so.
10th Street North, Washington Boulevard.
You look like an honest guy. I guess I'll take your word for that.
Trust me. I wouldn't lie to.
I'll bet.
Sincere from the heart.
Okay. Kirby Dodge. Huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, sweetheart. Gee, I like to do a nice kid a favor like that. Ed, where's my watch?
That was right here by my wallet.
Where's
my
your ring,
wallet?
Ed?
Where's my... Hey.
And your shirt.
Hey, come back here, lady.
I'm going to bring my...
Hey.
Ed,
hey.
My trousers. Back. Anything.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? My name is Alistair Crook, and I am your host for this award-winning series, Master Puss Theatre. Master Puss Theatre is presented by the station in cooperation with Public Service Broadcasting. We present the series Master Puss Theatre, made possible by a grant from the Siamese Cat Lovers of the World and Kitty Litter Incorporated. Today, part 2, in The Six Wives of Henry VIII, the story of Henry and his second wife, Anne Boleyn. As we pointed out yesterday, Henry was not really a bad person. Henry was sort of like an overgrown, spoiled big kid who had had everything go his way. With his divorce from Catherine of Aragon, he of course severed the ties between him, his throne, and Rome. Now married to Anne Boleyn, a beautiful young lady, the king had seemed quite happy. But there were dark, gray clouds on the horizon. The scene, again, the court of Henry.
Yes, who is it?
It is I, sir, the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Mm. I have news for you, sire, that I'm sure you'll be interested in.
You may enter, Chancellor. Don't I know you well enough to call you John by now? Do I have to call you Chancellor all the time?
Well, good sir, if you wish to call me John, anything you would like to call me at all, sir.
Very good. Now, what is this news of great urgency that you
are... I humbly beg your pardon, your masterful worshipship.
I know, you didn't promise me a rose garden.
I can't possibly face you when I speak to you of things that concern you and England and the crown and the people.
Oh, get on with it, will you? I know that...
It pains me, sire, to speak to you of this, but... I must speak to you about the Queen.
What about the Queen?
Sire, the rumor has been around the kingdom now some time that Anne has been frivolous with her love to you, sire.
Are you insinuating that Anne Boleyn is...
I am, sire. I would not believe the stories I had heard in court until I myself, with my eyes, saw for myself the first time last evening in the bushes behind the throne room.
And what did you see last evening in the bushes behind the throne room?
I saw Anne the Queen.
Yes.
With the Duke of Gloucester.
Yes, yes.
And he said to her...
What did he say to her? No.
And he said to her...
What did he say? Oh, dear.
And then she... And then he...
Oh. But then did they...
Yes, yes.
I must talk to the Queen. What is she? What is the Queen? Bring her here to me instantly. Bring the Queen at once.
Of course, the Chancellor fetched the Queen. And the Queen was beautiful as she entered the throne room, not knowing that what she was about to be involved in would perhaps be the end of her career.
What is it, Henry, love?
You can sit there and call me love when I have heard these terrible stories about you and the Duke of Gloucester.
What about the Duke of Gloucester? He was a guest in this house last night. I entertained him royally, I did.
That's what I'm afraid of. That's what I've heard. Come here. Do you know what the Chancellor of the Exchequer just told me that he saw?
What did he see?
He said that you and the Duke behind the garden, and that he said to you...
So what?
And then you said to him...
That I did.
And then he said to you... And then you both...
Yes. What of it, Henry? I guess I just got carried away and I lost me head for the moment, that's all.
Yes, Anne Boleyn, you have rightly said. You lost your head for a moment.
You certainly won't want to miss episode number 3. The story of Jane Seymour and Henry VIII. Jane, a lovely person. Jane, the real, true love of Henry.
One of the things that was most popular on radio in the old days were the dance band remotes, and musicians loved them because they got a lot of promotion and exposure. They didn't get any money from the networks. The stations would pay to have the remote lines put in, and some of these bands would play on a couple of networks a night, and guys like Glenn Miller and Benny Goodman all got their start on the networks late at night. Well, we kind of took that into consideration, and we have two bits coming up here. First of all, is a fellow we call Pee-wee Mozzarella and his Flukes of Dixieland. Now, that was a spoof on the Dukes of Dixieland, which was a Dixieland group back in the 60s, I guess. Let us listen to, first of all, Pee-wee Mozzarella, and we'll follow him with Raymond LaRoche, who had a kind of a society dance orchestra, sort of like Lester Lannan, if you will. They're totally different sponsors, totally different crowds, as you will hear. So we'll start off with Pee-wee Mozzarella and the Flukes of Dixieland.
And we got a good crowd in the room. A happy, happy, happy afternoon, everybody, from the beautiful Hotel Rosenfels in New Orleans, Louisiana, high above Lake Pontchartrain, where the Creole beauties meet the Bayou beauties. It's time for the Flukes of Dixieland, brought to you by Jubal Early Stewart, the greatest evening drink, both instant and regular. And they're a little rough today. Let me move around the room. And now, crawling up to the microphone, here's the star of the show, Pee-wee Mozzarella. Yeah, there we go. Wait a minute here. Hello. Pee-wee, why aren't you in the studio?
Yeah, this is a Babe
Bridge. That was the traffic. I'm in
traffic at the Bay Bridge. All right, Pee, we'll get here as quick as you can. Pee-wee's going to get the band going, even though he isn't here, friends. He's going to direct them by the telephone, and they're playing After You Gone. Well, I'm overcome with emotion, folks. That's it for today. From the beautiful Hotel Rosenfeld in Orleans, high top Lake Pontchartrain, in the Crescent City, where the Creole cuties meet the Bayou beauties. It's been the music of Pee-wee's Mozzarella and the blues of Dixieland. Brought to you by Jupiter Early School, the greatest name in grit. Till next time, so long!
There. We'll be NBCing you here from the Hotel Alabaster and the Boom Boom Room in little old New York City. It's time for the radio rhythms of Raymond LaRoche and the rippling rhythms of radio with Raymond LaRoche, brought to you by Clancy's Monkey and Snake Farm on Jersey State 88, next to Berrigan's Peach Orchard. By the way, we'll be picking quite a few this weekend as the peaches are in full bloom, so come on by and see us. Stop by Berrigan's and come on and plan to spend a fun-filled afternoon with your family at Clancy's Monkey and Snake Farm, where it's all always fun. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's the old maestro himself, Raymond LaRoche.
Greetings and salutations, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. Well, we're on the show now. So this afternoon, we're going to play one of the old favorites of the Lawrence Welk band entitled Calcutta. One and two and three and
rhythms of Raymond LaRoche, the Radio Revelers, coming to you live from the Boom Boom Room of the Hotel Alabaster. And don't forget, the giant Albertas are in now. They're just coming in right now. So stop by Clancy's Monkey and Snake Farm, right next to Berrigan's Peach Orchard this weekend. Plan to bring the family. Or if you're motoring around town sometime this week, don't wait for the weekend. Just come on by. And speaking of by, it's time for us to leave you right now. And Raymond, have you a final word for all your fans?
So long.
Had to have a cue sheet for that, huh, Raymond? Okay, Raymond, bless your heart. This program came to you live from New York City. Until tomorrow at the same time. The next time we all get together, Raymond LaRoche, the Radio Revelers, saying so long, everybody. So long.
You told me that the Raymond LaRoche character was based on somebody you knew.
I knew in college. It was a kid named Raymond LaRoche. And he sounded very meek. Sounded sort of like Elmer Fudd. Hi, Ray.
Hello.
You know. So I don't know what brought that to mind, but we coined that name. Sounded fitting for that kind of a band leader.
And Raymond didn't talk very much.
Not really. You know, he'd say, and now here's a word from Raymond.
So long.
And that would be the end.
From Washington, D.C., it's the Joy Boys in Living Stereophonic Sound coming your way. Please put your woofer about a half a yard from your tweeter and stand by for this.
Woo!
Thank you. Charlie Woofer and Mabel Tweeter, the birds and the dogs.
So, let's say, boys, which one of you and I just took time off from the Senate to come over and talk to you about a new bill that I'm introducing tomorrow?
What kind of bill is that, sir?
The bill I got at the old club the other night. I was on business. I'm going to get them to pay it.
Let me take a look at that here.
Yeah, look what I had for dinner here. It was a wonderful
seems
dinner.
Seems very reasonable. Peanut soup.
Peanut soup. I'll start with peanut soup.
Peanut soup. $0.25. You got some salad.
Salad, garden fresh salad there.
Chicken, what they call it?
Laura Lee.
Chicken Laura Lee. $1.90. Yeah. And the peanut soup. $25 worth of grits.
Yeah. Dinner's not a dinner without a mess of grits, boy.
Well, did they get you with the grits over there?
Yeah,
did you
well,
get the grits
sure
a fit?
Oh, well, I'll tell you.
Grits give you a fit.
I just love that southern hospitality.
Yeah.
And that little cute little waitress, she kept bringing them grits.
She's the same one that sells wallpaper to Dyer
That's
Brothers.
That's the one, yes. And I just couldn't resist her. As a matter of fact, we're being married tomorrow.
Well, isn't that romantic?
Yeah, not particularly, no.
Little hog jowls running rampant over a field of lilies, huh?
Well, I might recommend the old club, all you people that are visiting in Washington and the folks that live here. And you know more about it than I do.
Well, I just didn't mention it.
You're the announcer. I'm just... I'm a legislator, son.
You're actually a brief...
I'm not an
announcer. No, you're...
Actually, I'm an actor, sir.
You're a very bad actor.
Give me my money. I'll leave
I think we've been
handled.
All right. That's right. Here you go.
All right. Remember, as you go through life...
Very good. There you go. Thank you very much.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? I am Alistair Crook, your host for Master Puss Theater. Master Puss Theater is made possible by a grant from the Siamese Cat Lovers of the World and Kitty Litter, Incorporated. You may recall that yesterday, on our drama, we portrayed Anne Boleyn, the young lady who married Henry and who betrayed him by her infidelity. But during her period of marriage to Henry, she did indeed deliver to him a child. She became Elizabeth the First, and you know her story, a grand and glorious one indeed. There was a period where Henry, the boisterous, big, overgrown King of England, was indeed very happy and very much in love. It was during that period when he was married to Jane Seymour, whom he loved dearly. And Jane did indeed bear the king his son, later to become Edward the Sixth. But it was not meant to be, for Jane Seymour died at a very early age, and at this time it made the king so very unhappy.
It must be that I've done something wrong. I'm being paid back for my wicked ways. I love Jane Seymour more than any woman I have ever loved, and she gave me the one thing in life I wanted, a son. And now she's gone. What have I done?
It may seem strange, and it may seem a little odd to be sympathetic and feel sorry for the big Henry VIII.